And now, live from Tribune Tower, Chicago, this is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blastoff. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
All right, about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on August 6th, 2016. This is program 101 in the series of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. To my right, the vivacious and effervescent Lisa Wolf. What's up, Lisa Wolf?
Hi, Carl. How are you?
No Mike Costello today, huh?
No, he's not with us today.
Yeah, well, you
but
know
But we
what.
Do have Elif, our producer, in the booth. So
I was going to say that.
Everything is hunky-dory.
Elif Garris, hi. Hi, Elif. How are you, hon?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Terrific. And we're going to have a fun show tonight, or as Ed Sullivan would say, a big shoe. We have Fibber McGee and Molly to start things off. People have been asking for comedy, so we thought we'd start things off with a good comedy. Fibber McGee and Molly from 1945. Then it's The Shadow. You won't want to miss that. And then it's Have Gun, Will Travel, a good Western. So we have a comedy, sort of a mystery detective, and then a Western on this edition. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow!
On the upcoming TV show Designated Survivor, this actor stars as a cabinet member who, after an attack, becomes president of the United States.
He becomes president?
Yes, sir.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. What do they win?
A MyPillow, guaranteed to be the most comfortable pillow you will ever own.
Okay, 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. This actor was one of the stars of The Lost Boys.
Are those maggots? Maggots, Michael. You're eating maggots. How do they taste?
They're just delicious, Lisa.
Mm-mm.
Good. 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
We are back. This is show 101 of the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
Are those maggots? Maggots, Michael. You're eating maggots. How do they taste?
Oh, that's a good clip. Dave from Racine, how are you?
Shiny. Slang term for great used in the television series Firefly.
Well, do you recognize that voice?
That was Kiefer Sutherland.
You are right, Dave. You are a big winner. We are so excited to give you a MyPillow. It is guaranteed to be the most comfortable pillow you will ever own.
Oh,
you can
wow.
visit MyPillow.com and... But you will have your own pillow coming. And I can't stand it. I just have to tell everybody that Mike and I just ordered two MyPillows for Carl for his birthday.
Oh, thanks for ruining my birthday present.
I know, but it's on its
Surprise.
Way. So we're excited to
great.
Share
Thank
that with
you.
Him.
I can't wait.
And to share it with you as well, Dave. So to enjoy it.
Well, thank you very much. I was the caller on program one.
Oh, wow. I remember.
Now I'm program 101. So
there you go. You got 100 more to go and you're good.
Yes. So that'll be slicker than snot on a doorknob.
You got it.
All right, Dave. Thanks a lot.
Take care.
Thank you very much.
All right, buddy. Dave would have been good on Fibber McGee and Molly. There was all
exactly.
these characters that came in, and they said funny things like that.
Maybe he was
slicker
on
than
that.
Snot on a doorknob.
Right?
As Dave said. And maybe he was in his other life. Maybe he was one of the characters on Fibber McGee and Molly, because that's what we have for you now. Jim and Marianne Jordan, they were married in real life, Lisa,
yep.
unlike us.
Right.
They were married. Well, you're married.
I almost choked when
Lisa's
said
married,
that.
Just not to me. And you know, that's okay, Lisa. You'll be all right about it.
Oh,
it's
thanks.
Okay.
I'll get over you eventually.
You'll get over me. And they were natives of Peoria, Illinois, and they premiered on radio in 1935. Actually, they did a lot of vaudeville, too. And they decided to do a radio show called Smack Out. It was the name of their first show, Smack Out. And Jim Jordan ran a grocery store. where they were smack out of everything at the grocery store, and people would come in there. And then they decided, let's evolve this. Let's make this, let's broaden this into a show called Fibber McGee and Molly. They hired a writer by the name of Don Quinn, who was really a genius. And he turned all these crazy characters would come by and ring the doorbell. And they lived at 79 Wistful Vista in Wistful Vista, USA. They actually won their house in a raffle. Yeah, on one of the first shows.
Can you believe?
Yeah, it's pretty funny stuff. And great voice actors like Arthur Q. Bryant, who played Elmer Fudd in the cartoons, was Doc Gamble. And then you had Horatio K. Boomer, the old-timer Wallace Wimple, all played by Bill Thompson. And Gail Gordon, you know, Lucille's foil for years, was Mayor Latrivia. And then Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve was his next-door neighbor. And Hal Perry played Throckmorton P. Gildersleeve. Of course, that show spun off into its own regular series in 1941. So we have an episode of Fibber McGee and Molly for you now from October 23rd, 1945. I know you're going to love this. And it was sponsored by Johnson's Wax, and Harlow Wilcox does the announcing on this. And the episode title is Cousin Ernest Visits. Here's part one now of Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly. The makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry present Fibber McGee and Molly, written by Don Quinn and Phil Leslie, with music by the King's Men and Billy Mills Orchestra. The average U.S. male is never happier than when he is looking through the morning's delivery of the U.S. mail. And here at 79 Wistful Vista, the squire is trying to look as important as one postcard, a chain letter, and a gas bill will permit. As we join Fibber McGee and Molly.
Who's the postcard from, dearie?
A friend.
What friend?
I don't know. That's all the signature there is. A friend.
Well, what does it say?
It says, "Why don't you rake the leaves off your front lawn? Are you trying to make a slum of this neighborhood? Signed, a friend."
Fine friend. Do you recognize the handwriting?
It ain't hand-wrote. It's typewritten. I mean, it ain't handwritten. It's type. No, I mean, what
now,
I mean.
I know what you mean. Yes, I know.
It's typewritten.
And, while I believe that sending anonymous letters is a cowardly, cheap, and awful thing to do, why don't you rake the leaves off the lawn?
Fertilizer.
What?
Why, I'm leaving them there intentionally. Let the snow cover them and let them rot. Next year, we'll have the finest lawn in the neighborhood. Fertilizer.
Well, yes, there's that. And then, too, if you let those leaves lie there a few thousand years, you'll have a ton of coal. What are those two letters?
I haven't opened them yet. This one is kind of heavy. I wonder what...
Oh, my goodness, a chain letter. What's the other one?
Well, let me see here. Oh, well, I'll be... Hey, this is from my cousin Ernest.
Oh?
My gosh, I haven't seen old Ernest since, well, way before the... Oh, it was long before the... Come to think of it, I don't even know cousin Ernest. Must be one of the West Side McGees.
The what?
The West Side McGees. Oh, I guess I never told you about the family feud.
No.
You see, in 1876, my great-great-grandfather, father, my great-great-grandfather, Patrick Henry McGee, he got accidentally locked in the smokehouse for 3 days, you see.
Yeah.
And when he got out, he was so dark, my great-great-granduncle, McIntosh McGee, smacked him with an axe, thinking he was an Indian, see. That kind of split the family up.
Yes, I can see how it would. But I never was one for family quarrels. What does Cousin Ernest say?
Oh, he's coming to visit us for a few days.
When?
Oh, we got lots of time to get ready for him. He won't be here till the 23rd.
Fine, that'll give me time to clean the guest room.
Mm-hmm.
McGee, this is the 23rd.
What? Yes. It is? Well, gee whiz, I gotta get busy. Gotta get a guest card to the Elks Club and gotta line up a couple of poker games and prize fights and gotta
see... Oh, hello there, Alice.
Hello, Mrs. McGee. Mr. McGee, any mail for me?
Just a letter from the airplane plant, Alice. They said they hated to see you leave their employ and... wished you'd good luck and enclosed your final paycheck for $39.18.
McGee, did you open Alice's letter?
Why, certainly not. I was just seeing who it was for, and I happened to be lighting a cigar at the same time, and I happened to get the letter between me and the lighted match, and I read the whole thing before I realized what I was doing.
Yes, he was so absent-minded about it, Alice, he had to light three more matches before he could make out the amount of the check.
Oh, that's all right, Mrs. McGee. Some people might think he was a nosy little snoop, but I know it was just a friendly interest.
Hey, don't make too many social commitments for the rest of the week, kid. Hmm? I may want to arrange a few dates for my cousin Ernest. He's coming to visit us.
Maybe he's married, McGee.
Oh, I doubt if Ernest is married. None of the West Side McGees ever got married until late in life. Cousin Hubert didn't get married till he was 87. Yeah, and he married a kid of 65. Everybody said he was silly marrying a girl 22 years younger than himself. But they were very happy until he died 20 years later. Broke his neck falling off his polo pony.
Well, what does your cousin Ernest look like, Mr. McGee?
Frankly, Alice, I don't quite remember cousin Ernest. But all the West Side McGees were good looking. My great uncle Folsom used to pose for collar ads.
Creepers, really?
Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Yeah. Then the harness business folded up and he had to go to work.
You keep a few evenings open this week, Alice. I think you'll like Cousin Ernest. If he's like the rest of them West Side McGees, he'll keep you out dancing till the cows come home.
I used to go with a boy like that. He kept me out dancing till the cows came home and then got sore because I wouldn't help him with the milking.
Well, he'll probably be here by dinner time, Alice. You can meet him then.
Oh, that'll be super, Mrs. McGee. Gee, I hope he's tall and handsome with lots of money. Oh, what am I saying? What do I care how tall or handsome he is? Well, goodbye now. I'll go upstairs and check over my engagement book.
Well, I do wish I knew more about your cousin Ernest, dearie. I'd like to know what to cook for him and everything.
Well, in the first place, he must be my second cousin. He's one of Aunt Lucy's boys, and she's a second cousin to Annie Hogan.
Oh?
There's a lot of dough in that branch of the family. Hey, maybe I can get cousin Ernest to invest a few $1,000 in a certain project of mine.
What project?
I don't know, but I'll think of one. Hey, you know what?
Know what?
I'm going to throw a big dinner for Ernie at the Elks Club tonight.
Oh, dear.
Yes, sir. Get a private dining room. Flowers on the table, salted cups and little paper nuts, architects with melted butter.
You don't mean architects, sweetheart. Hmm? You mean artichokes.
Go on. An artichoke is a... Boy, this is a tough one, ain't it?
Yeah. I think you better skip it.
Okay. Hey, where's my Parcheesi board? All the West Side McGees are great Parcheesi players. You know where the Parcheesi set is, you?
Yes, I think it's...
Oh, I know. It's in the hall.
No, McGee, I just saw... Upstairs on the table in the hall.
Incidentally, remind me to straighten out that closet one of these days.
Did you ever get in touch with the Elks Club, McGee?
Yep. They're going to fix up the private dining room for me. Going to have squab, corn on the cob, architects with melted butter...
Artichokes.
Artichokes with melted butter, and crepe Suzette's for dessert.
Isn't squab pretty expensive?
The chef is a friend of mine. He's given me a special rate. He raises homing pigeons, and they lost their last six races. Hey, what are crepe Suzette's?
4-alarm pancakes.
Oh.
Who are you inviting to this clam bake, dearie?
Oh, just a few ultimate friends. Mayor LaTrivia, Alice Darling, Doc Gamble, Wilcox, old lady Carstairs, and you, of course.
Well, thank you. Yeah. It's nice to be numbered among your intimate friends. I'd hate to think we'd just been casual acquaintances all these years.
Oh, I gotta have you there. Somebody's got to insist that I make a speech. Right after the dessert, you say, I think we ought to have a few words from our host.
Okay.
Then I kind of blush and everybody will applaud, and then I'll get up kind of bashful and make a brief speech, an hour and a half or so. I got it all wrote out.
Well, it'll be worth the entire expense of this thing to see you blush, McGee.
Oh,
well,
that's easy if you know how. Just hold your breath a few minutes, then as you let...
Come in. Oh, hello, Dr. Gamble.
Hello, Molly. And how are you, egghead?
Fine, butcher boy, fine. Hey, Doc, what are you doing tonight?
What I usually do, make my rounds at the hospital, answer a few phone calls about whether or not it's all right to eat lobster and ice cream at the same meal, conduct my regular classes for amateur fathers in baby burping, and then go to bed for a well-earned rest, which I won't get because some dimwit picks the hour of 4 a.m. to light a match to look into his gas tank.
Well, is it all right to eat lobster and ice cream at the same meal, Doctor?
It is a matter for individual research, my dear. I've done it and loved it, but I happen to have a digestive apparatus designed by the Bethlehem Steel Corporation.
The reason I asked what you were doing tonight, Pasteur... I'm having a special dinner at the Elks for my cousin Ernest. Like to have you there. Not on account of your personality, but just in case somebody chokes on a bone.
Thank you, my boy. I'll be there if I can make it.
Fine.
But don't get annoyed if I'm called away in the middle of the salad course to usher a new little vital statistic into the world. Have I met cousin Ernest?
No, and neither have we, Doctor. He's coming to visit us for a few days.
Oh, well, it'll be nice to meet him, particularly if he hasn't...
I'll get it. 79 Wistful Vista, Molly McGee speaking. Who? Yes, he's right here. It's for you, Doctor.
Thanks. Gamble speaking. Who? Oh, yes. Well, I'll be right over and take care of it. Just don't worry about it. Yes, right away. You'll excuse me, folks. I've got to make an emergency call.
Oh, something serious, Doc?
Yes, I've got to show a woman how to remove stains from a rug.
Well, that's an unusual thing to ask a doctor, isn't it?
No, that was Mrs. Staines calling. Her husband's pie-eyed again.
Here at the Elks, McGee.
They were talking to Arthur Q. Bryan there, and Arthur Q. Bryan did so many cartoons, Lisa. He was actually the voice of Elmer Fudd and did a ton of vocal acting, and he was Doc Gamble on Fibber, McGee, and Molly. It's a great show going back to 1945, October 23rd to be exact, and it was sponsored by Johnson's Wax, and they sponsored Fibber, McGee, and Molly, I think, for like 20-plus years. It was kind of cool back then. Generally, these radio shows had one main sponsor. I mean, that was it. I mean, once in a while, they had more than one, but primarily, like Jack Benny had Jell-O for many years and then Lucky Strike for many years. Our Miss Brooks had Palmolive Soap. And, you know, Fibber, McGee, and Molly, Johnson's Wax, they were really loyal to their sponsor, and their sponsor was loyal to them. And that was a different time, you know.
Yeah, you know, loyalty is few and far between these days.
Now you watch a television show, there's 27 different sponsors on the show.
I think loyalty is underrated.
Yeah,
saying.
I know.
You know.
How would you know that?
I'm just saying.
All right, so let's take a break. Then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, David, and it is 11:35 here on a Saturday evening. It's August 6th, Lisa. It's August 6th, and I think we're going to celebrate Mike's birthday tomorrow, aren't we?
We certainly are.
Mike Costella, our executive producer. We have a cake. Lisa got a cake.
Hopefully he'll be here because we're going to eat that cake whether he's here or not.
Yeah, I got him a little little present. I got to say what it is. We're going to surprise him. And then we'll have a little cake tomorrow. It'll be fun.
We like to have parties here.
Elif?
We're always looking for an excuse for a party.
Elif, you bring a candle if you
could. I'll bring a candle. Okay.
Bring a candle.
Or you could run to Walgreens last minute in case you forget it.
All right. I tried, okay?
Elif is so sweet. So last week it was our 100th show. And I don't know what happened, but Elif, we were kind of making a big deal about it. And she ran to Walgreens and bought... What was it?
Chocolates that nobody hates.
Ferrero Rocher, which everyone loves, by the way.
Other than Lisa and Carl.
Except you two aliens.
But I like took a little bite and I was like, oh yeah, it's really good.
And he spits the rest in the garbage can.
But Mike liked them and you liked them. What are they called?
And then you guys gave them to me to take home.
We were being respectful.
Ferrero Rocher.
It was very sweet of you to do that,
though.
Don't think that we didn't appreciate it. Next time, turtles, please. I like turtles. And I like...
Okay.
Yeah, I love turtles.
Oh, she doesn't like them. I've got to get you something that you both like.
My favorite
That's
candy...
That's impossible. Wait, just so we're clear.
Yeah, we're completely opposite.
We don't...
My favorite candy of all time. Lisa, do you know what it is?
Chunky. You want to know mine? I mean, we're talking like...
Elif, do you know what a chunky is? Have you ever heard of a chunky?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's
an old candy.
Well, I think I've seen it before, but I've never eaten it.
I like Junior Mints.
Junior Mints?
Oh, those are so good.
See, I hate those.
I like Raisinettes.
Oh, I hate those.
Raisinets?
I like a peppermint patty.
So we don't,
that's the
yeah,
same
I hate
thing.
Peppermint patty.
It's the same thing
so Lisa
too,
and I have we're exact opposite when it comes to candy.
Mm-hmm.
And you like dark chocolate?
Yes.
I like milk chocolate.
Yeah.
So we really are polar opposites.
Yes, I'm not surprised.
Do you like Cadbury's?
What's
chocolate?
That? It's like the Cadbury's bunnies.
British.
The bunnies, and you bite into them, and there's all cream inside of them?
Not bunnies. They make the eggs, and they also just make the slabs.
No.
Okay.
Nah. So the three of us are pretty different when it comes to candy. Do you like Raisinets?
Ugh. Yeah.
I like Raisinets a lot.
Yeah. I don't care. I don't like chocolate with fruit, really. I like fruit, and I like chocolate, but I don't really much like them together.
How about, I'll tell you what, how about this? Okay. I think I'm going to get both of you. Both are going to like these. Reese's.
Ew.
Oh, yeah.
No, I don't need peanut butter.
Chocolate with peanut butter.
Yes.
That's a good combination.
So sorry.
Here's before Elif's time. Do you remember, Lisa, the commercials where there'd be a guy running?
Yeah, and they'd bump into each other.
He'd have
and
chocolate.
The chocolate goes into the peanut butter.
And there was a guy that had peanut butter, and boom, they hit
you
each other.
Dip, yeah.
Yeah, you dip my
And you know,
see,
and they
she
argue.
She's looking at us like we're both from outer space.
Well, she doesn't.
No, I imagine. Well, you are from outer space because
no.
You don't like Ferrero Rocher.
Actually, no, actually, Lisa's from Uranus, and I'm from Venus.
Oh.
I just like to say that word. I like to say that. Anyway, so Lisa and I remember those commercials, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners remember the commercials. The two people running, and they did the different ones. They would run, and they'd knock into each other.
Like they'd be on a construction site or something.
And they're discovering that chocolate
and
peanut butter worked out well together.
Yeah, I don't eat
and that's a
butter.
Reese's.
I'm kind of funny
no, I
about kinda, food.
I might need some candy now. I might need a little.
I have I have some dried pineapple here.
No, we probably have some Hershey's around us.
Yeah.
Here at WGN, they don't give you water, but they will give you Hershey's chocolate.
That's true. But luckily, you've got me.
Now there's some water. There's Argo tea next door. Get some water over
there's
there.
There's water from the faucet, too.
Yeah, there
the
is.
Bathroom.
That's real good water. Okay, so we're in the midst of Fibber McGee and Molly. And a little earlier on this Fibber McGee and Molly episode, they had a running gag where Fibber would open the closet door and everything would pile out. They did that on the first half of this. All right, let's get back to Cousin Ernest visits from October 23rd, 1945 on Fibber McGee and Molly.
Hadn't you better get down to the Elks and see if everything is all right for your dinner party?
Hey, I guess I better have it that. I got to confer with the chairman of the Greens Committee.
The Greens Committee?
Yeah, I want to be sure there's no sand in the spinach tonight. You can help arrange with flowers on the table and then
Hello,
you can...
Molly. Hello, pal.
Hello, Mr. Wilcox.
Junior, you're just the guy I wanted to see. You free for dinner tonight?
Well, I was taking my wife out to a Chinese restaurant. Every now and then she gets a yen for some gung far chi and lim tui.
Well, looky, Junie. I got a cousin coming for a visit, and I'm throwing a little marshmallow roast at the Elks. Why don't you bring your sparring partner and join us?
Gee, I'd love to, pal. Hey, let me use your phone, and I'll check with Sugarface.
Help yourself, Mr. Wilcox. Tell her it's strictly informal, plaid tie and toothpicks.
Okay. Hello, operator. Give me Westwood 000001.
You must have known somebody to get a low number like that.
Hello, is this the Wilcox residence? Mr. Wilcox speaking. I'd like to speak to Mrs. Wilcox, please. Yes.
Who was that?
One of the butlers.
One of the butlers?
Yes, Tilly Butler does the house cleaning. Pete Butler washes the windows. Hello, Dreamboat. This daddy's little taffy apple?
How long has he been married?
I'm beginning to wonder if he is married.
Listen, honey lip. Remember Mr. McGee? Yes. Only you mustn't talk like that, lovingkins. They'll take our phone out. Well, look, we're invited to have dinner with the McGees at the Elks Club tonight. Huh? Oh, but you can do that in 20 minutes or less, dear. Remember what Daddykins is always telling you?
What are you always telling her, Daddykins?
Quiet, McGee.
Look, Jellycake.
Oh.
All you have to do is pour out a little Johnson's Glow Coat. No, Gloco. G-L-O.
Hyphen.
C-O-A-T. Gloco. Oh, now, there's lots of it on the shelf in the back hall. Sure. Now, look. Just pour a little out on the linoleum, spread it around with the long-handled applier, and let it dry. What? Well, of course, you don't have to do any rubbing or buffing. It shines as it dries. Yes, I know you love that beautiful linoleum, but just take Daddy's word for it. Gloco will protect it and keep it from getting dull and dingy looking. Yes. All right, Spaniel Eyes. Goodbye. What? Oh, you know I do. Goodbye.
She knows you do what, Mr. Wilcox?
Have my umbrella with me. What time at the Elks Club, pal?
About 7:15, Waxy. But look, how come your wife don't know any more about Glowcoat than that after living with all these years with you?
Oh, she knows all about it. She knows all about it, but she always pretends not to in case I'm phoning from a public place and there might be some people standing around.
But she will come to dinner with us, Mr. Wilcox.
Oh, sure. She said she was all set for some Gung Far Chi and some Lim Tui, but she'd be glad to come.
What the Sam Hill is Gung Far Chi and Lim Tui?
Ham and eggs.
Oh.
See you at 7:15, pal. So long, Al.
What a couple. Can't you just see her one of these days with a gleam of joy in her eyes, whispering to old Harlow that precious little secret that she just bought a new batch of Glowcoat?
Well, never mind them, dearie. We better be getting downtown.
Yeah.
Your cousin Ernest might be here any minute. Say, what if he calls while we're gone?
Oh, I'll leave a note on the telephone.
My... I never would have thought of that.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh, I wonder if that'd be Cousin Ernie. Maybe it is. Come in!
Heavenly days, it's Mrs. Carstairs. Hello, Mrs. Carstairs.
How do you do, my dear? Good day, Mr. McGee.
Carsty, you're as welcome as a tax refund. Where are you tying on the feed bag this PM, kiddo?
I'm sorry to appear obtuse, Mr. McGee, but would you mind translating that into English? Remember, I haven't had all your disadvantages.
Well, he was just asking if you have any engagement for dinner tonight, Mrs. Carstairs. Himself here is giving a little dinner party for a cousin in the private dining room at the Elks Club.
Well, thank you so much. I shall be glad to come. Although, due to a previous engagement, which is part of my personal program of cultural development, I must scram quite early.
Well, scram any time you like, Carsty. You got to get home for something?
My music lesson, Mr. McGee.
Heavenly days, dearie. Are you studying music? Piano?
No.
Banjo?
No.
Is it a secret, Mrs. Carstairs?
Well, not exactly, but I've just taken up this instrument because of Mr. Carstairs. You see, he was at one time a captain in a Scottish Highland regiment.
You don't mean...
You're learning to play the...
Yes, the bagpipe. Mr. Carstairs likes to have me march around the breakfast room table playing the Battle of the Boyne Water as his oatmeal's being served.
Boy, he must be a real Scotsman.
Oh, he is indeed, Mr. McGee. He knows that after one of those performances, I'm much too winded to do any shopping that day. Well, I must gang away the new hoots toots.
The King's Men sing our kiss goodnight.
Oh, question, when it's time to part and the good night start, why is it always like this? Is there a reason why every scheming guy wants it to end with a kiss?
Answer,
a kiss good night is all right, but remember this, that a kiss good night leads to another kiss. A kiss good night with a hug real tight is nothing short of bliss. And a kiss goodnight leads to another kiss. It's an old custom for a boy and a girl to embrace
in some secluded place.
Even Mr. Cupid never could be quite so stupid as to turn about face. So it just ain't right to kiss goodnight and stop at three or four, 'cause a kiss goodnight leads to a dozen or more. Now, osculation being what it is today, it looks very much as though it's here to stay. The question is, brother, are you getting your share? The answer is you'll never get anywhere till you try. Try, try, one kiss goodnight is all right, but remember this, that a kiss goodnight always means three or four, five, six, seven, eight, nine, ten, 11. No ceiling on that old feeling. So start tonight to kiss goodnight. Goodnight, 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 goodnight.
Thank you.
All right, boys. We need one more chair on this side of the table. Yeah, that's it. Hey, Joe, that second place on the left there hasn't got any butter knife.
So what? He won't have any butter.
Oh, okay. Well, how does everything look, Molly?
Very handsome, McGee. Who arranged that floral centerpiece?
I did. You like it?
Why, it's beautiful. Those are lovely roses.
Yeah. Artificial ones would have been prettier, but there's a paper shortage, and I had to get real ones. Hey, Joe, how about ashtrays?
Oh, forget it. Everybody stubs out the butts in the coffee saucers anyway.
Okay. Now, let me see. I wish I knew what kind of cigars Cousin Ernest smokes. I'd get a couple of boxes.
Look, dearie, I don't want to be a damp Afghan, but aren't you going a little overboard for a cousin you never saw?
Nothing is too good for a McGee, Snooky. By George, if I can't welcome my own blood cousin and such... Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
What kind of wine are you serving with the fish course?
There ain't any fish course.
What kind of wine would you serve if we had a fish course?
Applejack.
Ah, my choice, exactly. I want to do this thing right, Molly. After all, Cousin Ernest may be a kind of a connoisseur.
Incidentally, isn't it about time you were hearing from Cousin Ernest if he's coming?
Oh, didn't I tell you? Doc Gamble said he'd pick him up at the station.
Oh, how will Dr. Gamble know him?
Well, Doc's wearing a carnation in his buttonhole.
Oh?
Mm-hmm. That way, Cousin Ernest will Hey, Joe.
Now what?
We going to have a bus boy tonight?
Yeah, but he'll be a little late.
How come?
Missed his bus.
Oh. Now, let me see. Napkins, place cards, celery, knowledge.
Oh, McGee, here comes Mayor Latrivia. Huh? Hello, Mr. Mayor.
Hello, Molly. I got your invitation at my office, McGee. As I was going by here, I thought I'd drop in and tell you I'd accept with pleasure.
Well, swell, Latrivia. This is in honor of my cousin Ernest.
Oh.
You'll be seeing a lot of him the next few days. Poker games, golf, bowling, and all stuff like that there.
Hmm. We're going to have broiled squab, Your Honor. You like squab?
Oh, very fond of it, Mrs. McGee.
Didn't have much of that stuff in the Solomon Islands. Eh, Latrivia?
Yes, but we called it by the native term.
What was that, Mr. Mayor?
Spam. Our food was all right, but in some of the officers' messes, they had
some of the what, Latrivia?
In some of the officers' messes, they
had... Isn't that just sour grapes, Mr. Mayor?
Isn't what just sour grapes, Mrs. McGee?
The fact that you weren't allowed to eat with the officers don't give you any right to call their food a mess, does it?
It is not sour grapes. Mess is the correct term for the officers' dining room.
Well, even sweet grapes can make quite a mess, I'll say that, but... You'd think the officers would be a little more fussy than to make a mess in their own...
They didn't make a mess. It was a mess.
Well, who made it?
It's always a mess. I mean, in the service, the eating quarters are always a mess. Because...
Now, that's... just a darn minute. Just because you're in civics...
You
now...
listen to me, McGee. You're always getting me into one of these verbal brawls, but by George...
Boys, boys. Stop that shouting, my goodness.
I was merely saying, Mrs. McGee, that in an officer's mess...
Well, why did they always serve grapes if it made such a mess?
They didn't always serve grapes. They never served grapes. In the 3 years I spent in the Coast Guard, I never saw a grape.
That's because you weren't an officer, I guess.
Yeah. That's really what you're griping about, Latrivia, because you had to eat with the enlisted men.
I'm not griping about anything. I mean, if the officers did eat grapes, their mess was... If the officers mess, what I'm trying to tell you is that an officer's gripe, a grape... I mean, if they made a mess... I say, McGee...
Hey?
You were in the last war, weren't you?
Yes, he was, Mr. Mayor.
The big war. You betcha.
Tell me, what did you call the sergeant who had charge of the food supplies?
We called him Big Nose. Big Nose Whitney. Why?
But what was his official title?
He didn't have any title. He was an American.
I mean, he was a sergeant, wasn't he?
Certainly.
Ah, what kind of a sergeant?
A darn good one, Latrivia. I remember one time...
I mean, what was his official rank?
Sergeant.
What sergeant?
My sergeant! Hey, where are you going, Latrivia?
Down to the post office, McGee. If I'm not back here for dinner, I've re-enlisted!
Wonder why he was so interested in our mess sergeant.
Search me. Frankly, I'm getting a little worried about your cousin Ernest.
Oh, he'll be along any minute now. Doc Gamble will find him.
When I think of the expense you've gone to for this dinner, and then if he didn't show up...
Ah, patah, shucks, it's only money. Hey, Joe.
Yeah?
Them squabs ready for the oven?
They're in the oven.
Oh.
Oh, dear. This thing is... Oh, well, here come your guests, McGee. Hello, everybody.
Oh, come on in, folks.
Hi. Oh, my, you nice.
Come on, gather right around. Now, look, everybody, take your places according to the place card, see? And when Doc Gamble comes in with my cousin Ernest, let's all sing, for he's a jolly good fellow, huh?
Yeah, we'll hold it. Oh, here he is, McGee. Huh? Here's Dr. Gamble.
Oh, okay, folks. And a one, and a two, and a three.
For he's a jolly good fellow.
What's the big idea, Doc?
Where's Ernest?
Right here. Ernest, this is your cousin Molly and cousin Fibber. Friends, this is your cousin Ernest.
Oh, well, hiya, cousin Fibber. Hi, cousin Molly. Gee, that was a swell train ride. I sat by the window all the way.
Are you Ernest McGee?
Well, I ain't Clark Gable.
How old are you, Ernest?
11, going on 12. Hey, I'm hungry. Where are we going to eat?
We're going to eat right here, Ernest. You like squab, son?
What's a squab?
It's a pigeon, and look who's talking. Ladies and gentlemen, the government of Canada has invited us to broadcast from Toronto, Ontario, next week, in conjunction with the opening of Canada's 9th Victory Loan.
We are proud and happy to accept the invitation, and we look forward to seeing our friends in Canada.
So next week, we'll broadcast from the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, Canada.
Are you all packed, dearie?
Yeah, I'm all right. Hey, but look, what language do they speak in Canada?
English. But if you speak slowly, you'll get by.
Oh. Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax products for home and industry. Inviting you to be with us again next Tuesday night when we'll be broadcasting from the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto, Canada. Good night.
National Broadcasting Company.
One of the best comedies of the golden age of radio, Fibber, McGee, and Molly on many years. They started in the mid-30s, didn't go off the air till the late 1950s. And towards the end of their career, they did a five-a-week 15-minute feature. They were doing most of their career, they were half an hour a week, Tuesday nights usually. And then later in their career, after Johnson's Wax bowed out, Reynolds Aluminum became their sponsor. And then they went to 5 days a week, Monday through Friday. It was not the same, though, Lisa. You know, this was really a staple of NBC, Fibber, McGee, and Molly Tuesday nights. Harlow Wilcox doing the announcing there. Great cast. Shirley Mitchell, who we've had on this show years ago, not on this show, but one of our shows. Shirley Mitchell, she's passed away now, but she was wonderful on our show when we interviewed her. Arthur Q. Bryant, B. Benaderet, Gail Gordon, the Kingsmen, Billy Mills and his orchestra. It was a great, great show. Fibber, McGee, and Molly, hope you enjoyed that from October 23rd, 1945. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, David Jennings. It is 12:06 on a Sunday morning. This is the WGN Radio Theater, program 101 in the series, hour two. And in this hour, it's The Shadow. You won't want to miss that. Probably the most famous radio show of all time, really, The Shadow, right? Can you think of any other show that had more buzz about it than The Shadow?
No, but all three that we're playing this evening or this morning are quite big in classic radio.
Yeah. Have Gun Will Travel. We just tuned in to an episode of Fibber, McGee, and Molly. And you know what? When we come back here tonight, Lisa, we'll be back here in
a few hours.
23 hours,
yep.
Right?
Yeah.
I did the math.
Yeah.
Did the math correctly, I think. Elif is checking with her.
She's got her abacus going there.
Hey, we said the same exact thing. That's pretty scary.
We've got Armis Brooks, Inner Sanctum, and The Whistler coming tonight.
That's a good lineup, too. Armis Brooks, Inner Sanctum, and The Whistler.
Well, we promised a big variety, especially after we stopped the spotlighting. And I can't tell you how many people have texted in on the text line that they appreciate us starting with a comedy. So,
starting tonight with a comedy. Yep. Armis Brooks.
Comedy
Eve Arden.
Tonight.
Yeah.
Can you sing that for me?
Comedy tonight.
Yeah. That's great.
Any music producers out there that want to give me a record contract?
Yeah, that was excellent.
Elif is a singer, though. Mm-hmm. Did you know that? And a piano player and a singer, right, Elif?
Yeah.
Would you sing for us at some point one of these times? Would you do that?
We'll talk.
How about singing
on the spot.
How about singing my happy birthday tomorrow? Would you do that?
Ooh, good one.
We'll talk
alone.
We'll have to bribe her.
Okay. We'll buy you some Ferrero chocolates.
Some Nutella.
Nutella. I'll eat them all.
All right. All of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming TV show Imaginary Mary, about a woman whose life is turned upside down when she meets the love of her life, a divorced dad with three kids.
What is it called? Imaginary Mary?
Imaginary
Mary.
That
sounds like a cool title for a TV show. Sounds funny.
It is. It does sound funny. And this actress is very, very funny.
312, yes.
Guess this actress.
Yeah.
At 312.
981.
781. 7200. 7200. You will win a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate.
All righty. Here's a hint. This actress played Debbie Downer on Saturday Night Live.
We should go out sometime and have some laughs.
Sure. Sounds fun.
Warning, I can't have children.
Warning.
312. You know what? She says it like it is.
That's right. 312-981-7200. Who is that actress? Tell us who it is. Win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's Pizza. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back to show 101 of WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip one more time.
We should go out sometime and have some laughs.
Sure, sounds fun.
Warning, I can't have children.
Let's talk to Stephen from Skokie. Hi, Stephen.
Oh, hi, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
A funny story. I worked with two 80s with the name of Lisa Wolf.
You do?
Two of them in the same place.
My condolences.
Are you sure one of them isn't me?
I don't know because I've never seen your face. It might be you.
It could be me. Maybe we work together.
Lisa does do a lot of other gigs.
What do you do, Stephen?
I work at National Lewis University in Wayland. No.
Oh, wow. I wish I worked there. I love school. I've always loved to be in that community.
There's two women you work with that are named Lisa Wolf?
Yep, exactly.
Do they have an E at the end of Wolf or...
One is Lisa K. Wolf. Oh, no, there's no E at the end.
Yeah.
No, mine doesn't either. I don't have an E either. That's strange.
See, and I thought you were
now
the
you
only
know three of us.
Lisa Wolf in the whole world.
Well, I'm kind of unique. Oh, boy. That's funny, Stephen. Tell me if you know that voice.
Yes. The answer is Rachel Dratch.
You are right. And you are a winner, and you have won a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati, some of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. I know there's one near you in Skokie.
Oh, and, yes, there is.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I've been to it. You can find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and check them out at loumalnatis.com. Thanks so much for calling in. Now you know three Lisa Wolves.
Hey, you know what, Steven? Maybe you and I could join like a self-help group, you know, to get over this.
Or you can invite anybody named Lisa Wolf out for Lou Malnati's pizza.
Or what do they call those? You go to therapy. We'll go to therapy together, Steve.
Pizza is my therapy, Steven.
Thanks, buddy.
Take care.
All right. Congratulations. You want a pizza.
I love that.
Yes, but and you know what? It's not just any pizza.
I know. It's my favorite pizza.
All right. So it's time, Lisa, for the shadow. You know, I think if you and I were around back in the golden age of radio, I would have been Lamont Cranston, and you would have been the lovely Margot Lane. Yep, and you would have been the only one that knew my secret,
right.
Secret identity.
Oh, I know plenty of your secrets.
I know you do. And that I, Lamont Cranston, are is I'm actually the shadow. I could cloud men's minds so they could not see me. That's kind of how he, which is really interesting when you think about it. This worked perfectly on radio because here was a guy that in the Orient learned the hypnotic secret to cloud men's minds. Now, whatever that means, right? He was able to cast a hypnotic spell on people, right? And they couldn't see him.
Right.
So he could just talk to them and they thought it was coming out of their head or whatever. He'd be like, I'm the shadow. And he'd laugh. Right. And so then he'd go around and he'd solve crimes. But really, in this character was a multimillionaire. He was a multimillionaire playboy.
See, he's a lot like you.
I love
right?
that.
You can relate to that.
Multimillionaire playboy.
That's you to a T.
Lived in a mansion, drove. He had a chauffeur.
That would be nice.
His chauffeur's name was Shrevey. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm.
All right, so yeah, one of the most popular mystery detective shows of all time came on the radio in the 1930s, but by 1937, Orson Welles was playing Lamont Cranston, alias The Shadow, and Agnes Moorehead, you know, and Dora from
of
Bewitched,
course.
She was the lovely Margot Lane, and many other actors played The Shadow, including Bill Johnstone, John Archer, who is Ann Archer's dad, John Archer, and then Brett Morrison. In fact, Brett Morrison is on this particular episode, and he played the role the longest. So let's go back to March 12th, 1944. This is called Death to the Shadow. Here's Brett Morrison in part one of The Shadow.
Of men. The shadow knows.
Once again, your neighborhood blue coal dealer brings you the thrilling adventures of The Shadow, the hard and relentless fight of one man against the forces of evil. These dramatizations are designed to demonstrate forcibly to old and young alike that crime does not pay. The Shadow, mysterious character who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Several years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, Death to the Shadow.
Well, Professor Petro, your new television apparatus doesn't seem to be living up to your boasts. In fact, it doesn't seem to be working at all.
But one moment, Mr. Crane. A little difficulty. There. It is fixed. Now, what shall my television machine show to you?
You really mean that with this radio device you can tune in on some place in the city and show it to me on that little screen?
Any place. Inside buildings, inside locked rooms, down in the subway, wherever there is even a tiny bit of light, my new television rays will go. Name the place, Mr. Crane.
All right. You know the Gordon Trust Company building?
But, yes, a few blocks from here.
Dan Gordon is an old pal of mine. Let's peek into his office.
Very well. I turn the dial. So, now this dial. So, and on the screen.
By George, it is the Gordon building.
The office. Which is it?
The fifth floor, those big windows.
So, just this dial.
Why, it's as if we were sailing right up to the window.
And now we see inside the office.
I'll say we do. There's Dan Gordon at his desk, talking to his confidential secretary.
Now you shall hear them speak. Listen.
Got all the bonds there, Wilson?
Yes, Mr. Gordon.
And let's get them in the safe fast. They're worth $500,000 and good as cash.
$500,000?
Hmm?
Should I put them in the safe?
I wish you would. Sphinx is the combination word. S-P-H-I-N-X.
Yes, sir. S-P-H-I-N-X.
You and I are the only ones in the world who know it, so don't talk in your sleep.
Oh, not me. There. There, safe now. Good. Well, that's all for now. I'll ring if I need you.
Yes, Mr. Gordon. I'll be outside.
Okay, Professor. That's enough.
Well, Mr. Crane, now will your rich friends be interested in my machine?
Dan Gordon would be. But I'd like to see the machine work some more, Professor Petro.
As you wish.
Now, this time, show me how you tune in on a place that you've never seen before. I'll just pick one from the phone book.
All places are the same to my machine.
Here's a name. Fenton.
Fenton.
The address, 1137 River Drive.
1137 River Drive. On my special map, it is about here.
I see.
I turn this dial to the distance marked. So. And this dial to the direction the map shows.
I'm right with you.
Then I switch on this screen, and you see.
Well, say, this is wonderful. We're looking at the front of a house, and there's the number. 1137.
Two men are just opening the front door. Let us look inside. Turn this control.
And we're looking into the living room.
Mr. Crane, look.
What is it?
The two men who have entered the room.
Yes, I see.
But there is a third man in the room, and they do not see him.
Well, but how can they help but see him? He's right out in plain sight. Say, there's something queer going on. I recognize that third fellow. Let's listen in.
Very well. We will hear.
Well, the old place sure looks good, Lefty.
After 3 years in Stirfinger, any place would look good to you.
Not a thing changed. Yeah, you took good care of the place.
Yeah, just like you ordered. Well, I'll be seeing you, boys.
Okay, Lefty. I got some nice jobs lined up for you guys.
So long, Finger.
Good to be a free man again. What was that? Lefty, was that you?
It was the Shadow. Welcome home, Finger.
The Shadow? Where are you? I can't see anyone.
Your brother could not see me either, Finger, for no man can see the Shadow.
My brother?
Yes, Finger. The murderer the world knew as Killer Fenton.
You, Shadow, it was you who sent him to the chair while I was up the river.
I helped the law bring him to the bar of justice. I'm here, Finger, to warn you not to follow in his footsteps.
You've got nothing on me.
No, your debt to society is paid for the moment. But you've been planning to resume your criminal career as leader of your brother's gang.
How do you know that?
The Shadow knows many things. So follow the path of law, Finger, or suffer the consequences.
You can't scare me, Shadow. I'm going to get you, do you hear? I'm going to get you and revenge my brother. Shadow, where are you? He's gone.
All right, Professor. Shut the machine off.
But I do not understand. This Shadow, the other could not see him yet on the screen.
So
he was...
that's it. Fenton must have been hypnotized. That's why he couldn't see the Shadow. But you can't hypnotize a machine.
What do you say, Mr. Crane?
Forget it, Professor. Let's talk about this invention of yours.
Ah, then you are satisfied. Your rich friends, Mr. Gordon, Mr. Jennings, Mr. Dexter, they will back me, no?
I'm afraid you're making a mistake. Gordon, Jennings, and Dexter are no friends of mine.
Not your friends, but...
In fact, I hate them. They ruined me once, and I'll never rest until I get revenge.
What? Mr. Crane, you make the joke, no?
Yes, Professor, I make the joke. Very funny joke, but only I will laugh.
I don't understand.
Why, you poor fool, you don't see the possibilities of your machine. Why, already your little gadget has not only shown me how to put my hands on a cool $500,000, but it's actually told me the true identity of the Shadow, a secret of fabulous value to the underworld.
You mean you would use my instrument for criminal purposes?
How discerning of you, Professor.
No. No, I won't allow it. You can't do it. You can't do it.
Can't I, Professor?
A gun.
Yes, Professor.
No!
A gun.
Extra, extra paper. Read all about it. $500,000 robbery. Watchman killed. Confidential secretary held for murder. Extra, read all about it.
Cranston, I don't care a thing about your hunches. The guy that knocked off the watchman was the old gent's secretary, this Wilson guy, and that's all there is to it.
But, Commissioner, I know Arthur Wilson didn't do it. I've known that family for years. I went to school with Arthur's sister.
Very nice, Miss Lane. That'll be Exhibit A for the defense.
All right, Commissioner, but don't say I didn't warn you.
Warn me?
Yes, Commissioner. Don't look surprised when Wilson is proven innocent.
Now, Cranston, if you got any ideas about snooping in this case, forget it. You're a nice guy, Cranston, for some of these screwy mysteries. But this is an open and shut case.
Yes, Commissioner, just as you say.
Cranston, I want you to promise you'll keep your nose out of this.
Yes, Commissioner.
But Lamont.
I promise, Commissioner.
But Lamont.
Well, Commissioner, we'll have to be getting along. Come on, Margot.
But Lamont.
Goodbye, Commissioner.
Goodbye.
Oh, Lamont. You know Arthur Wilson is as innocent as I am.
Of course, Margot.
Well, then why did you make that silly promise to Commissioner Weston?
Oh, I don't know, Margot. But you didn't hear the Shadow promise anything, did you?
That you, Tom?
Yes. I stepped out to get the late newspapers. The cops still think young Wilson is guilty.
I know. I was just watching a very interesting scene at headquarters.
At headquarters?
Yes. What would you say if I told you that just 5 minutes ago, the Shadow decided to try to prove Wilson innocent?
The Shadow? Oh, no, you don't mean it.
Well, don't be alarmed. I have all my plans worked out. The Shadow won't bother us.
Yeah, I know, but...
Plans, Tom, that go far beyond my vengeance on Gordon, Jennings, and Dexter. I'll have that and millions besides, and I'll make you rich, too. But we're going to need help. A gang to do the actual work.
I don't follow you.
Well, you will. Any moment now, we should be having a caller who... Oh, there he is now. Come in. Ah, Mr. Fenton. Come in.
All right, I'm in. Which one of you is Crane?
I am, Mr. Fenton. This is Mr. Cogan, my associate.
How do you do?
Never mind the chatter. Your phone, you knew something interests me, so I'm here. Now talk, and talk fast.
Very well. Yesterday, you received a warning from the individual known as the Shadow.
How do you know that?
And you want to revenge your brother's death by killing the Shadow, am I right?
I'll get him if it's the last thing I do.
I understand how you feel.
What do you know about the Shadow?
I know his true identity.
What? Who is he?
Oh, slowly, Mr. Fenton. I have a proposition to make.
If it's dough you want.
It's not money. I want you and your gang to join forces with us.
Join up with you? I don't get it.
I'll explain. I've perfected a machine by which I can watch every move made by the police, learn the combinations of safes, ferret out the most hidden secrets.
I don't believe it.
I'll prove it later on. Now, this is my proposition. You and your men will carry out our orders. We'll tell you whom to rob and how. We'll give you foolproof information. And in return, we get half the loot.
You almost make me believe you mean it.
I do. Join us and you'll be wealthy in a month. And, as a bonus, shall we say, I'll reveal to you the identity of the Shadow.
What have I got to lose? Okay, it's a deal.
Good. Now, your first action will be the removal of my enemies. Daniel Gordon of the Gordon Trust Company, Albert Jennings of Jennings Manufacturing, and John Dexter of Dexter & Company.
Rub them out, you mean?
Yes. Like you, I put revenge before money.
Okay, it's still a deal.
Well, then I think a drink is called for. Tom, pour some drinks.
Yeah, of course, Howard. There you are.
Yes, and one for you, Mr. Fenton.
Thanks.
Now, what shall we drink to?
I'll tell you what we'll drink to. Death to the Shadow.
See how they tied that in there, Lisa? The name of the episode is Death to the Shadow.
Got it.
And then they said Death to the Shadow, and then they had the organ music there.
Right.
And that's the name of the show, Death to the Shadow, from March 12, 1944. Brett Morrison as Lamont Cranston, alias the Shadow, with Marjorie Anderson as the lovely, just like you, Lisa, the lovely Margot Lane, Ken Roberts doing the announcing. And the writers on this show, they were a writing team, Robert A. Arthur and David Cogan. And I knew David Cogan for many years, worked with David Cogan, because he and his writing partner also created The Mysterious Traveler and also The Strange Dr. Weird. They wrote all of those shows, and they wrote a lot of episodes of The Shadow. And when I licensed The Mysterious Traveler, I licensed it from David Cogan, very nice man, lived in New York his whole life and wrote for these New York-based radio shows back in the 1930s, 40s, and even into the 1950s. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Thank you, Roger. And I knew if I asked Roger about Have Gun Will Travel, he'll teach me something.
Roger's doing the rumba up there.
How to rumba? I can do this. That's about it.
I call it the rumba.
Okay.
Roger knows his classic radio shows.
Yes, he does.
Not as well as you, young man.
But
not as well as you.
I mean, if I were to say, okay, Boston Blackie. Let's just say Boston Blackie for a second, okay?
Okay, it's an old-time radio
All right,
show.
So,
see, I knew that.
But now I'll ask Roger a question. Who played him in the movies? He'll know.
Oh, gosh, and I love the movies.
Boston Blackie, the B movies, you know, Columbia Pictures.
And it was a great, the actor who played it in the movies played it perfectly.
He did, and
a
you know
great
what?
Great personality.
His son, the actor that we're going to talk about, mm-hmm. his son was a big executive here at WGN for many, many years.
Really?
Yeah.
See, these are things you know that I don't.
So the actor that played him in the movies was Chester Morris.
Okay.
And Kenton Morris. Do you remember Kenton Morris from years? Years ago, he was a big executive here at WGN, Kenton Morris.
He'll be a son of a gun.
Yeah, that was
He'll
his
son of a
that
gun.
Was his son.
Well,
it was
no,
Chester
seriously.
Morris's
yeah.
son.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And then on television, the role was played by Kent Taylor. Mm-hmm. And then on radio, it was Richard Colmar, Dick Colmar, mm-hmm. who was married to Dorothy Kilgallen.
Kilgallen.
Yeah, I remember
who was
her
on
from
What's My Line.
What's My Line.
Yeah.
Who else was on What's My Line? Fred Allen. Anybody
well, but,
else?
But see, Fred Allen wasn't on full time. They,
no,
they had a lot of people that rotated a lot.
That's right.
Gosh, Dorothy Kilgallen.
Yeah, she was on it a long
Johnny
time.
Carson was on a few times.
Really? I didn't
oh, yeah.
know that. I didn't know Johnny Carson
was on. Well, what, before he got The Tonight Show,
yeah.
when he had his there own were, show, the previous show that
he
failed.
Did a, he did a game show, too,
yeah.
for a while.
And so they brought him on because they kept trying, his agent kept trying to get him more publicity and
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah.
So he was on.
For a while.
Bennett Cerf.
Was Alan.
Bennett Cerf was on.
Bennett Cerf. What about, oh, gosh, well, Betty White's husband, was he on that at all for now? He was just like, no.
London.
Yeah, London. Was
yeah,
he,
yeah,
he
was
on.
For a while? I thought there must have been like 20, 25 different people on the show, but Kilgallen was one of the regulars.
Yeah, she was a regular. Fred Allen was on a long time until he passed away. He was sort of a regular.
That wasn't that towards his later
mm-hmm.
years,
yeah.
I think?
Yeah.
After the radio show was over.
Yes.
Yeah.
Then he went on What's My
and
Line.
And he looks older in it, too, if
yeah.
when you look at the reruns right now on TV.
You know, Dorothy Kilgallen mm-hmm. died of very mysterious causes. They've really never figured out. They you know, her obituary says that she died of an overdose of barbiturates, but they found her in bed, sitting up in bed with makeup on and everything, which was weird because she would take her makeup off before she would go to bed. But she was at this time investigating the Jack Ruby killing.
Oh,
you know, when
right.
they killed.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Dallas.
Well, she mm-hmm. was investigating, I should say, she was investigating, sorry, she was investigating the Kennedy assassination.
Oh, okay.
And she had interviewed Jack Ruby.
Right.
Right? She interviewed Jack Ruby.
Mm.
And she told a friend, I'm going to blow the lid mm-hmm. off of the Kennedy assassination. And then about a week later,
yeah.
she wow. was she was gone.
Look at you, see? A
yeah,
wealth
so very
of information.
Strange stuff. Yeah, that's a. Yeah, that whole Kennedy thing. You know, I'm going to Dallas Monday, by the way. And while I'm out there, I'm going to try to solve the crime when I'm out there.
You know, I think maybe it's already been solved.
Has it?
I think so.
I'm
going to
be there for 4 days,
report.
And I just figured I would try
well,
to.
You might spend some time in the library.
I'm
going
to go to the book depository, check that okay. out.
Check
I'm
out a
see,
book?
I'm going to check out a book over there. I'm going to see if I can find, maybe a casing, bullet casing somewhere. You never know.
Oh,
I'm
gonna, all right. Maybe there's something that wasn't found.
I'm going to canvass the whole area while
because
I'm there.
Because you're a great detective.
Yeah.
I know that.
Well, Boston
yeah,
Blackie's my favorite radio show.
There you go.
Yeah.
You learn from the best.
That's right. Speaking of detectives, we're listening to a detective. He was sort of an amateur detective, Lamont Cranston, The Shadow.
Yeah.
You like The Shadow, of course,
I love
right?
The Shadow.
All right. Let's go back to March 12th, 1944. Here's the conclusion to Death to the Shadow on The Shadow.
And now, back to The Shadow.
Yes, who is it?
Detective O'Grady to see Mr. Gordon.
All right, just a moment. Is something about the robbery?
Yeah. The commissioner wants to know if you can identify this knife.
Knife? Why, no. I never saw it before.
Well, take a closer look.
Yes, what is it?
Package for you, Mr. Jennings. Just came special delivery.
Package? Oh, let's see it.
Yes, sir.
Marked confidential. Well, isn't it expecting any packages. This string seems to be stuck inside the package. There. What? It's ticking. It must be a clock.
Good Lord, it's... Well, here you are, Mr. Dexter.
Thanks, John. I'm glad to be home. Been a bad day. Reading about the deaths of poor Gordon and Jenny.
Now, Mr. Dexter, look out.
Hey, what's
that
the matter?
That car across the street. A man with a machine gun. He's gonna... Oh!
Gordon, Jennings, and Dexter. Now we can get down to business. In a month, we'll own this town.
Extra, read all about it. Crime wave sweeps city. Prominent men killed. Millions of dollars stolen. Police helpless. Extra, extra, read all about it.
Lamont, you mean the police haven't any clues? They haven't any idea who's committing these crimes.
I'm afraid that's about the size of it, Margot.
And you haven't learned anything either.
I'm afraid I've failed as utterly as the police. Margot, it's as though some superhuman gang were at work in this city. They not only fail to leave clues, they also seem to have advance information on every move the police are going to make.
Oh, no wonder they've been so successful.
Yes, that's not all. There could be spies inside the police department. But the gang even knows in advance what I'm going to do.
Oh, Lamont, you're joking.
No, I'm not. Yesterday, I made a secret appointment with a petty crook who wanted to sell me some information. Before I ever saw him, he was murdered.
Oh, how horrible.
So a dozen other similar incidents have happened. I'm checkmated at every turn.
Why, it's as if they were able to watch everything you do.
What?
I said it's as if they were able to watch everything you
do. Yes, I know. You just reminded me of something.
What, Lamont?
Seems impossible, and yet... Margot, some time ago, there was a foreign scientist, a Professor Petro, who tried to get me interested in a remarkable television machine he claimed he'd invented.
Television?
I wonder whatever became of him and his invention.
What do you think?
I think it's something I ought to check on. I have something else to do first. You see, Margot, at 10 o'clock, I have an appointment at apartment 9D, the Riverdale Arms. Someone there who claims to know the leader of the gang.
Oh, that's wonderful, Lamont.
It's only 8 now. You mind if I turned out the light, took a little nap in this chair?
Why, no, of course not.
Oh, it's fine. There. Margot, listen, we've got to speak in whispers.
I thought you were up to something.
I have an idea I want to test. I am going to the Riverdale Apartments. I keep a room there for business purposes.
And your appointment?
I made that up. But perhaps someone will meet me there after all. I'm going to slip out the back way.
What do you want me to do?
Stay here till I get back and leave the lights off.
Yes, of course.
Good girl. Oh, wake me at 9:30, will you, Margot?
Yes, of course, Lamont.
Yes?
This is Crane. Send Lefty to the Riverdale Apartments, number 9D. A man who knows something lives there. Have Lefty eliminate him.
Drop him up. Right.
Then go to the apartment of Miss Margot Lane. The address is in the phone book.
Margot Lane? What's the job there?
Bring her here. Bring along a man you'll find asleep in the living room, too. But be sure to knock him out before he can wake up. And bind them both tightly. There must be no slip-up.
Don't worry, there won't be. Listen, Crane.
What?
It's time you spilled the dope on the shadow. I'm beginning to think you're bluffing.
I'm just as anxious to be rid of the shadow as you are. He's becoming dangerous. But before the night is over, you'll have the pleasure of personally delivering him to the morgue.
This is the right joint. There ain't nobody here. The boy says to rub somebody out. There's nobody to rub. The room's empty.
Whom were you expecting to find, Lefty?
Who's that? Stick him up, yo. Hey, there's nobody here.
Nobody but the shadow?
The shadow. My gun is gone.
I have it now, Lefty. Now, who sent you here? Answer.
Nobody sent me here.
I want the truth, quickly.
I'm not saying nothing.
I have your gun in my hand, Lefty. Now talk fast.
You can't bluff me, Shadow. I know you won't shoot.
Won't I, Lefty?
Hey, that slug almost hit me.
Yes, this time I'll do better.
Oh, wait, Shadow, wait. I'll talk. Finger Fenton sent me.
You lie. He's not clever enough to plan these crimes.
No, he didn't.
And who did?
I don't know. Only Finger knows who the brain guy is.
Somebody big, with connections. He knows everything. Some kind of machine tells him.
As I thought. All right, get into that closet.
The closet?
It'll keep you safe for the police. Quickly now. The Shadow has other work to do.
Crane, I'm getting tired of this runaround. Now, it's time you talked. Who is the Shadow?
You'll know very soon, Fenton.
I'm beginning to wonder. You slipped me 2 bump stairs tonight. I think you're trying to put over a third one.
Lefty's capture couldn't be helped.
Couldn't, huh? And what about the snatch? You said we'd find a guy and a girl in the apartment. There was just a girl in there. 2 mistakes in 1 evening ain't so good. Maybe that peekaboo machine of yours is slipping.
There'll be no more mistakes. Within an hour, the Shadow will be dead.
You better not be bluffing.
Why, you fool, don't you realize it's just as important to me to see the Shadow dead as it is to you? Now go send in Tom Cogan and that girl, Margot Lane. I have a phone call to make. A very important phone call.
Margot? Margot, where are you? Margot?
She's not here. The apartment's empty, the rug crumpled. A lamp knocked over, there's been signs of a struggle. Telephone.
Hello?
I see you've discovered Miss Lane is missing.
Who's this calling?
That hardly matters, does it? I just want to tell you that if you hope to see Margot Lane alive, you'll obey very carefully the orders I'm about to give you.
Trying to make me believe you kidnapped her?
You doubt it?
No, I believe you. All right, what do you want me to do?
As soon as you hang up the telephone, walk straight out of the building and get into your car, which is parked at the curb.
Go on.
Drive by the most direct route to where Highway 19 crosses the city limits. Then park beneath the streetlight there and wait.
Park and wait. Then what?
Presently, 4 men will pull up beside you in another car. Get into that car and let yourself be bound. They'll drive you to where I'm waiting. Is that clear?
Perfectly.
If you stop for a moment on the way, speak to anyone or try to phone the police, Margot Lane will die rather horribly.
I understand.
It's a bright moonlight night. I can watch every move you make. 1 single false move, and the girl dies.
I know your powers. All right, I'm starting now.
Ah, he's coming. He's almost reached the point where our boys are to pick him up.
I wish I knew if you were lying.
Well, this time I'll let you look for yourself. You see this small screen here in front of me? What does it show?
That's a car. A guy driving it. He's wearing a soft, dark hat. Now he's pulling up under the streetlight at the city limits and parking.
Now, are you satisfied?
Yeah. Yeah, except that I can't see his face.
It's our man. I've watched him from the instant he put down the telephone. He's obeyed orders exactly.
You'll never capture him. He's too clever for you.
Oh, Miss Lane, I'd almost forgotten that you were with us. Your loyalty does you credit. But we're complete masters of the situation.
Well, you'll find out that you're wrong.
I suppose he tries some tricks after we get him here.
Tricks? What can he do? He'll be bound, you and I are armed, and Finger here even has the submachine gun he's so fond of. No, once our man steps into this room, his doom is sealed.
What was that?
Shadow, it's you.
It is a Shadow. I've heard that laugh before. He's in this room.
Huh? He can't be. He's still waiting in his car for our men. I can see him plainly.
Perhaps the Shadow can be in 2 places at once. Visible in one and unseen in the other.
It's him, I tell you. We can't see him, but he's here.
He's tricked us.
Fenton, bolt the door and guard it. He's doomed anyway.
Yeah. I got the door locked. Now tell me where he is and I'll blow him in half.
But we can't see him.
No man can see the Shadow unless the Shadow wishes to be seen.
You're wrong, Shadow. I can see you.
Where is he? Just tell me.
No, don't shoot yet. I want to find out how much the police may know about us. But cover the space just 1 foot to the left of the mantle. That's where he's standing.
You're very clever, Crane. I suppose you've now focused this television machine so that it shows you this room.
Exactly. And on the screen, you're perfectly visible. Make a move, Shadow, and you die.
I told you I'd get you, Shadow, for sending my brother to the chair. In a minute, you'll be saying hello to him.
Shadow, be careful.
You're all so sure of yourselves, why don't you go ahead and shoot?
I'm gonna. We're wasting too much time. Crane, I'm gonna let him have it.
Of course, the police at the window might try to stop you.
The police? Where?
Quick, shoot! It's just a trick!
Why, you jerk! Take that! You're dead now, you gotta be.
Quick, feel around on the floor for his body. He must be dead, but I can't see him. The screen doesn't show him anymore.
Because I'm directly behind you now, and it's time for me to disable that machine, I think.
No, stop him!
I'll get him. He's not gonna go away this time. I'll get him. We're gonna kill him.
You shot me.
I'll take that machine gun, Fenton.
What?
You've killed Crane, your partner in crime, not the Shadow. You wanted to follow in the footsteps of your brother. And as soon as the law has judged you, you're going to. Straight to the chair.
Lamont, if you don't tell me how the Shadow solved the case and escaped the trap those men set for him, I'll never speak to you again.
Well, it was really you who solved the case, Margot.
I did.
Of course. If you hadn't said that it was as if someone was watching every move I made, I'd never have remembered Professor Petro and the television machine he once made such great claims for.
Oh, and then when you slipped out of my apartment in the dark...
I was trying a little experiment which proved to me I was being watched. Then I knew some form of television had made all the recent crimes possible.
But after Crane phoned you at my apartment, he was watching you on the television screen every second. How was it possible to trick him then?
He wasn't watching me. He was watching a decoy. When you're being spied on, it's good strategy to have a double.
A double?
Mm-hmm. Before I return to your apartment, I arranged with Commissioner Weston to have a detective who strongly resembles me stationed in the dark entranceway to your building.
Oh, and when you left the building...
It was my double Crane saw, not me. I stopped just an instant there in the dark hallway and whispered instructions to him.
Oh, I see.
My double got in the car and drove off. I went back in, traced the phone call, learned where the hideout was, and with the help of a fast car...
The Shadow reached there long before anyone expected him.
Exactly. There's no time to make any elaborate plans beyond phoning Weston to raid the place. But luckily, Fenton was so keyed up that... when he fired at the Shadow, his aim with that machine gun was pretty bad.
Then he lost his head and killed Crane while trying to kill the Shadow.
That's right.
And Crane never got a chance to reveal the Shadow's real identity.
Luckily for the Shadow, no. So it was easy when the police got there for the Shadow to slip out unseen and for Lamont Cranston to come puffing in a minute later to be twitted by Commissioner Weston.
Oh, poor Commissioner Weston. Lamont, you know what he said when you arrived?
No, Margaret, what?
He said that's just like Lamont. Always late when there's any excitement.
The Shadow program is based on a story copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications. The characters, names, places, and plot are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Again next week, The Shadow will demonstrate that...
the weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay. The Shadow knows.
Next week, same time, same station, your friendly Blue Coal dealer brings you another strange and thrilling adventure in the Shadow's daring battle against the forces of evil. Be sure to listen. This is Ken Roberts saying, keep the home fires burning with Blue Coal. This story produced by the DL&W Coal Company, distributors of Blue Coal. This is Mutual.
Live audience there. They were in front of a large audience, and you know what they would do, Lisa? They'd come out in tuxedos. I mean, like Brett Morrison, who was playing the Shadow, he would be in a tuxedo doing the show.
So kinda many cool. People had
and
suggested that we wore gowns and tuxedos for our 100th show, but we declined that suggestion.
I have a tuxedo.
Yeah. I don't really have a gown.
No, I have a tuxedo.
A nightgown.
At the end of the show here, he says, the weed of crime bears bitter fruit. Crime does not pay.
I know it.
The Shadow knows. That was the trademark ending to the show. Of course, the Who Knows What Evil Lurks in the Hearts of Men was the beginning. Very popular, very, very popular. People to this day, even if they didn't
recite that,
yeah, even
those
if they
words
did, even
to this day.
Even if they didn't grow up listening to The Shadow, if you said The Shadow, they go, Who Knows?
Yep. What Evil Lurks. So, we had people post that all the time on our text line as well.
That's Death to the Shadow, March 12th, 1944. Okay, we have a break, and then we'll have the news. And then in our next hour, it's Have Gun, Will Travel. So stick around. Thank you, Roger Banish. It is 107 on a Sunday morning here on the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari, and Lisa Wolf to my right is my co-host.
Apparently, I'm one of three Lisa Wolfs.
This is
in
true.
The area.
Elif Garris, our producer.
Hello.
She is our producer on Saturdays and Sundays, kind of officially starting this week, right?
Yeah, she gets a full dose of us, huh?
Yeah.
Gosh, sorry about that for you.
I better get the napkin for my brow.
Yeah. You probably are a very patient person, I would think. You must be. If they assigned you to us, you must be a very patient person because we can be. I'll tell you this, Lisa.
Who's the we part?
How about
You know, as Tonto said to the Lone Ranger, yeah, what you mean we chemosan.
Yeah, what
that's
you mean
right.
We. And, you know, it's funny that you should mention Tonto, because Lisa and I, we were thinking
about that.
We were thinking, we might start asking our listeners to text in a short joke. And that reminded me of a Lone Ranger joke.
Oh, okay. Yeah. All right.
Unfortunately, I can't say the Lone Ranger joke on the air, and I think you know the one I'm talking about. But we might ask our listeners to send in short jokes that are airable.
Appropriate.
Right. To air on the radio. And if we'll do one an hour, we'll do six a weekend.
Okay.
And if we use their joke on the air, they'll win a prize.
Look at that.
That might be fun, right,
like a
Roger?
Classic radio prize.
I think not only do we get audience participation,
yeah,
you get humor.
Right.
And prizes.
And yeah, we'll do that through the text-in line. So no call-in, but text-in.
Oh, okay.
Our text-in line.
Oh,
so,
is the same as the regular phone number,
Which is the
same
as a regular phone number, but that way I can communicate with them via text.
312-981-7200. If you have a short joke and you want to win a prize, and I think the prizes will probably be like Twilight Zone CDs or some classic radio CDs or some fun things
stuff
like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we might try
appropriate.
It.
Appropriate.
And appropriate and
short,
respectful.
Right. Sure,
and
a couple of lines.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, right?
Nothing
too
dirty.
I like, no.
Might be fun. So, folks, if you want to text in a short joke, 312-981-7200, we might try this starting tonight when we come back here, right, Lisa? But we need the jokes now if we're going to do it in our first hour for tomorrow or tonight.
They can come in whenever. They can come in at the beginning of the show.
This is true.
Yeah.
I guess so. All right, so in this hour, we are going to tune in to a terrific Western on Have Gun, Will Travel, starring John Daner as the Man in Black Paladin. This is a story written by Gene Roddenberry, the creator of Star Trek. It's called Maggie O'Banion. And this was also televised. You know, a lot of times on this series, Roger, because it was on radio and television at the same time, the television scripts that they would, you know, that they would write for the TV show, they would adapt them for radio airplay or vice versa.
Sure.
And so a lot of times they got dual use out of a script. And Gene Roddenberry wrote about a dozen episodes of Have Gun, Will Travel before he, because this was 1959 here, and Star Trek, started in the early, probably
mid-60s.
That was in mid-60s, right?
65, 60.
Star Trek, 66?
65, 66, I think.
Yeah. I one time interviewed, or I actually called, when I was doing the Twilight Zone radio dramas, okay, and we had, you know, all these amazing actors appearing in these Twilight Zone radio dramas. Mm-hmm. I got William Shatner's number, right, from his agent or something. She said, yeah, just give him a call, and, you know. And so I called, I thought, this is going to be great if he would do a Twilight Zone, because, you know, he was on Twilight Zone.
Sure.
Twilight Zones.
Yeah, one of the most famous episodes.
Yeah, he did. That's right. The one on the wing, right? The 20,000 Fathoms. It was called.
Which was redone for the movie.
Nightmare at 20,000 Feet or something like that. Yeah, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet, I think it was. Yeah, that's right. And I'm trying to think, who was the actor in the movie that did that? Was it Lithgow? Wasn't it?
John Lithgow.
Yeah, I think it was John Lithgow in the movie. William Shatner was not interested.
Well,
let's see.
You were paying the going rate of
$10.
We were paying $1,000.
Ooh, and he didn't take that?
No, and he didn't.
Wow.
He was like, how long will it take? I said, an hour and a half, 2 hours.
Yeah.
No, thanks.
Really?
Yeah, no, he passed. But I still love him. I still love William Shatner, even though he wouldn't do it. He was one of the few actors that turned me down to be on a Twilight Zone radio drama.
You should have asked me. I could have gotten you James Doohan.
Oh, yeah. He's great.
I know.
Yeah,
I interviewed him when I lived in Vegas, and the very first Star Trek movie came out. And I interviewed him for the Associated Press radio network.
Well,
great guy.
We had some, I'll tell you, we had Lou Gossett Jr., Michael York. We had Sean Astin, Lou Diamond Phillips, Jim Caviezel, a bunch of people from the Prison Break series.
Oh, yeah.
You know, including Sarah Wayne Callies, who's now on Walking Dead or was on Walking Dead before she got killed on the series. And then, I mean, on and on and on. So many actors that we had. Lisa Wolf was in some of those.
Really? I mean,
yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
I've known Carl for...
Academy Award winner Lisa Wolf.
Quite a while Academy now. What year was that when we did that? That was right when I met you, probably about 2008.
Yeah, 2008.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. I've known you that long.
Isn't that a long
Gosh.
Time? Yeah, that's how it all started.
When is my medal being sent to me?
That's or the what chest I'm, dependent on, right?
Yeah,
keep waiting.
Exactly. All right, so in this hour, Have Gun Will Travel. You won't want to miss it. All of this brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
On the upcoming TV show Man with a Plan, this actor stars as a dad who discovers the truth every parent eventually realizes. His little angels are maniacs.
Boy,
and
that's true.
If you can recognize this actor's voice, you will win a $25 gift card for Lumel Nadi's, home of Chicago's best and our favorite deep dish pizza.
All right, I'm not going to say what character he played on Friends, but he did appear on Friends.
Yes, you are. I think it might be time for my sponge bath. Sorry, I'm just so used to hitting on the extras.
All right, who is that actor? Call us 312-981-7200. What do they win, Lisa?
You talking to me?
Yeah.
Yeah. $25 gift card for Lumel Nadi's.
All right. Call us now. We'll find our winner after this break.
Welcome back. This is show 101 of the WGN Radio Theater. We are playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's play that movie clip again.
Yes, you are. I think it might be time for my sponge bath. Sorry, I'm just so used to hitting on the extras.
So, let's talk to Dan from Fitchburg. Hi, Dan.
Hey, guys. I love the show.
Good,
thanks,
good.
Dan.
We're so glad you got through, and we're hoping you recognize that celebrity.
Can't not recognize him, Matt LeBlanc.
I know. I actually remember that scene that you pulled from that clip with the sponge bath. That was a great one. Dan, you are a winner. You've won a $25 gift card for a Lumel Nadi's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. I hope you have a Lumel Nadi's nearby.
Oh, yeah. No, I'm from Chicago, so I get down all
the
time.
Oh, perfect. Well, you can visit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Great. Visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations and check out their menu online at lumelnadis.com. Thanks a lot for listening, too.
Thanks, Dan.
Thank you, guys.
Thanks, buddy. Appreciate you calling in and winning. All right, Lisa Wolf, it's time now for Have Gun Will Travel. Now, we talked about this a little earlier, but if you missed it, this was a Western, kind of an adult Western, began as a TV show in 1957, then made the transition to radio in 1958. There were only a couple of shows that ever did that. Most of the shows, as you know, started as radio shows and then made the transition to television. This did the reverse. I believe My Little Margie was another one, and I can't think of. There was one more, but I can't think of it right now. Richard Boone played Paladin on television. John Daner played him on radio. And I was wrong. Gene Roddenberry wrote more than a dozen episodes. He wrote 24 episodes. The research checked it out. And Bruce Geller, who created Mission Impossible, also wrote a bunch of them, too. And so there was a lot of great writers on this. Harry Julian Fink, one of the writers and creators of Dirty Harry, was a writer on Have Gun Will Travel. So they really did spend the money, got the right writers, and it was a popular show. Now, Paladin was a former Union cavalry officer. He graduated at the U.S. Military Academy at West Point, and he was a decorated Civil War veteran. And he was well-schooled, highly cultured, became rich as a hired gun at very high prices. He lived at the Swank Carlton Hotel in San Francisco, and he dressed in formal attire and ate gourmet food and frequented the opera. He was a real ladies' man, Lisa. I would have liked this guy. I would have wanted to hang out with this dude.
You like to hang out with other ladies' men?
Well, yeah. I mean, he was, you know, I could be his wingman, right?
Right.
Walking
Everybody
into a bar,
a
be
wingman.
A wingman for him. And then he dressed, but when he was a soldier of fortune, boy, he worked. And he dressed all in black. He put a derringer under his belt. And his calling card was a chestnut emblem with a symbol that referred to his occupation as a champion for hire. That was that little chestnut knight on his it was also on his holster, too. And it was on his calling card. And the weapon of choice was a custom-made Colt. Well, not a Colt. Yeah, Colt single action 45 caliber Army action cavalry model revolver with a 7.5-inch barrel. So it was a long barrel on it. It's a really cool series. I mean, there's a lot of detail to this program.
Exactly.
Yeah, and it was seen on television until 1963, and it was heard on radio until 1960. So you weren't born yet. It was ended the year I was born, 1963. And then when Lisa came a year later in 1964, it wasn't on the air anymore. Might have been in reruns, though.
You give too much information away.
That's all right.
Who says?
It's okay.
Who says?
I'm 39, no matter what. I've decided I'm doing the same
thing.
You
and Jack Benny.
It's Jack Benny. 39. That's it. All right. It's time for Have Gun, Will Travel. Let's go back to April 5th, 1959 for Maggie O'Banion. Here's part one of Have Gun, Will Travel.
I'm offering you a choice, to fight with knives or guns. But just remember this, whichever way you choose, the loser will be a long time dead.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Starring Mr. John Daner as Paladin. San Francisco, 1875. The Carlton Hotel, headquarters of a man called Paladin.
Mr. Paladin! Mr. Paladin!
Yeah. Over here, hey boy.
Oh, Mr. Paladin, message.
Oh, thank you, hey boy.
Mr. Paladin.
Yes. Oh. How do you do?
Badly. In the future, when you send a note to a lady, kindly instruct the waiter not to hand the note to the lady's companion.
I apologize. Perhaps I can recompense you in some way.
Mr. Webster, one answer?
Tell him my price is $1,000, hey boy. Madam,
it has caused me the most dreadful kind of embarrassment.
Well, I am indeed sorry, madam. If you will allow me...
I already told him $1,000.
He actually insisted that I was flirting with you across that entire dining room last night.
It was ridiculous. You were the soul of decorum. Webster said what, hey boy?
Oh, he turned red like a stove, but he said he'd pay.
Ah, good.
He forbade me to ever communicate with you again.
That's bad. The gentleman is your husband?
Certainly not.
Well, that's good. But we'll have to show him, you and I, that absolutely nothing occurred to cause him to act this way.
Of course.
Well, what time may I pick you up for dinner?
8:00.
Always a good hour.
Until then.
Oh, boy. What I tell Miss Webster?
Oh, tell him I'll find out why three of his riders have been waylaid on open rangeland, and I'll do what I can for him.
Oh, yes, I have gun, will travel?
Exactly. The trail to the Brazos River is a long and lonely one, and it took 10 days hard riding to get there. And once I was there, it was nothing but brackish, muddy water, the product of an unfriendly nature. A mile beyond, the trail sloped up into the rocks. It was hard going.
Hold it right there. Man's on your left, man's on your right, and I'm here. Them's your eyes. Unbuckle that gun belt, let her drop. Climb down. Now don't wiggle a hair. Boys?
Yes, sir.
You stand behind him, Pete.
Yes, sir.
Mister, can you see that sign?
Yeah.
Then read it.
Closed range, keep out.
O'Banion Ranch.
You crossed.
This is open range, according to the map.
According to me, it's open when I say it's open. You boys can have his clothes and horse. I'll just take a gun. Hey, he's got a derringer. Get him, Pete. He don't talk so tall now, does he?
You ought to be able to split wood and fetch water.
We take orders from Cyrus, Cookie.
Good morning. Is this the O'Banion Ranch?
Well, I declare. Look at the wind blew in.
I have some business with whoever owns this ranch.
Move on, fella. Next ranch is 20 miles. No handout here.
I want to see the owner.
Maybe we ought to let him see the owner if he takes a bath first. Owner here is kind of persnickety about dirt.
Water trough, Pete. Get a hold of him. Get
out of here. You think you're pretty smart.
And you're dirtier than he is.
If I get out of here, I'll turn you apart.
Well, I declare, mister, didn't look like there was much man under them raggedy clothes and all. Here, you can't go in there.
I'm looking for O'Banion.
I'm Miss O'Banion. I own this ranch.
I told him not to come in, Miss Margaret.
Is this one of our men, Cookie?
No, ma'am. Just drifted in.
I see.
That's quite a collection of guns, miss.
Collecting guns happens to be my foreman's hobby.
I know. He collected mine. I'd like to meet your foreman.
Well, then come back in a week. Cyrus and his range crew left this morning on a cattle drive.
I could use some kitchen help now, Miss Margaret. With Cyrus gone, I can't get help out of the hands.
Well, then hire this one if you wish. But see that he takes a bath and put him into some clean clothing.
Say, let me put a question to you. How much do you appreciate the things that make life just a little easier? Like living any place you've a mind to. Now, according to our Constitution, if we don't like where we live, we can move to any other state we want to. All we have to do is hop in our car or take a train or a plane, and off we go. And when we get where we're going, there's plenty of stores and shops and tradesmen to help us in our new home. But let's go back a spell to 1790 and see what happened then when folks got the urge to move. If you were living back then, you'd maybe pick up a copy of the Providence Gazette and you read an article called Advice to American Farmers. It tells all about moving out west, which is western Pennsylvania and Ohio in 1790. It says if you're moving, you'd better take along some apple, peach, and garden seeds, a kettle for boiling, maple sap, and, of course, a gun and plenty of ammunition. You should also have a Bible. Other folks moving west in 1790 took along maple saplings to plant or homemade tools they could use to build boats when they got there. Boats were about as important as horses in 1790. Most of the towns were built inside a fort, since the Indians didn't specially like all this pioneering that was going on, and guns and ammunition were worked overtime. And Indians weren't the only ones who gave folks trouble. There was plenty of bear and wolves and other wild animals to keep folks on their toes. But somehow, in spite of all the fuss and bother of moving into a new community, folks in 1790 didn't complain. They just kept working and fighting, so living would be easier in the future. The future you're now protecting.
All right, that's the first portion of Have Gun, Will Travel, talking about traveling in 1790. It was like, that's like a PSA that they had on the original show, talking about traveling in 1790. I wonder if they had air conditioning in the cars back then. Do you think they did?
In the cars.
Gosh, because yeah. I would think it would be hot, you know, traveling cross country in 1790.
Yeah, it might be tough in the car.
Because I didn't have air conditioning in a car when I was a kid. So I'm guessing they didn't have air conditioning in their cars back there in 1790.
But when you were in 1790, when you were in your car.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, so anyway. This is the first portion of Have Gun, Will Travel. It's called Maggie O'Banion. It's going back to... Gosh, I hope people out there don't think I'm serious. But you never know. You know, people are really
You drove a station wagon.
Yeah.
Wagon.
A covered
wagon.
Yeah. And there, and you horses. Had both ends open, so there was air conditioning.
Well,
you
back then I would have driven a Hyundai like I do now.
It's Hyundai, I'm just saying.
Hyundai?
I did a commercial, and they told me it's Hyundai. It rhymes with Sunday.
Oh, I say Hyundai.
They said it rhymes with Sunday.
Roger, what do you say?
No, I'm telling you.
Don't you say Hyundai?
No, I worked for them. It's Hyundai rhymes with Sunday, I promise.
Oh, gosh.
There's a commercial out there.
I say I'm staying out of this discussion.
There is a commercial running around out there somewhere where I just bought my new Hyundai Santa Fe.
Hyundai?
Yeah.
Hyundai Santa Fe.
Although I don't actually have a Santa Fe.
I thought it was called Hyundai.
So the
I always thought it was
out.
Hyundai.
You were wrong.
Really? Okay.
Once or twice. That's it.
I was wrong once in 1977,
no,
right, Roger?
No, it was 1790. Yeah.
1790.
And now today.
Have Gun Will Travel. Are you enjoying this? Have Gun Will Travel?
I think it's great. I'm having fun. I love it.
You know,
I love the sound effects.
While this was playing, I checked on this. So check it out. Gene Roddenberry, he wrote this show. So this aired on April 5th, 1959 on radio. And one day earlier, on April 4th, 1959, it was televised.
That's fantastic.
Isn't that cool?
Oh, my gosh.
So if you saw it on TV, if you saw it on television, then the very next day you could have heard the radio version of it. And maybe that's what they did back then with this show, because I did the research, and that's what happened on this. Now, maybe sometimes not, but that's really pretty cool. Watch the TV version and the radio version. And, you know, the script had to be different for radio because, I mean, it had to be adapted.
Oh, of course. You couldn't see the thing, so they
had to change it a little bit. All right, well, we're way late for news, so it's 1:33 in the morning. Oh, we got a break. Then we'll be back to you, Roger. So
Sounds good. Stand
by. Yeah, I want to remind all of our listeners that Lisa and I and Elif are here every Saturday and Sunday night. Right, Lisa?
Right, Carl.
Get here around 10. Go on the air at 11.
Yep.
11:05.
We have a lot of things to talk about.
We get here around 10.
Before we start.
We have a little Elif and Lisa
little
and I.
Pre-show meeting.
A little pre-show, yeah. You know, talk about
the weather.
Yeah. Weather or what kind of Hyundai.
It's Hyundai.
We drive. So here every Saturday and Sunday, 11 to 2 in the morning, playing your favorite classic radio shows. And if you want to request a certain show, be our guest. We're happy to play your request. Just go to our Facebook page, which is WGN Radio Theater. Just hop on Facebook, as Mike would say.
I'll just call you Mike. Or you can go to the text line, 312-981-7200, same as the call line.
Yeah, it's a lot easier, though, and a lot, I think, better records if they go to, it's tough because the text line goes away, right?
Well, no, we just see it the 3 hours while we're here each night.
Right.
For 3 hours on Saturday and 3 hours on Sunday. I'm actually watching the text line
more clearly
than the Facebook.
Yeah, but the Facebook, when we're going and deciding what we're going to air, it's a lot easier to go back and look at the Facebook pages and see, okay, somebody wants Johnny Dollar, somebody wants Boston Blackie, you know, whatever it is.
So when you go through the Facebook pages, it's a lot easier for you.
Well, I can actually do that. I can actually do that.
You can look through.
Yeah, I can look at that.
Good.
We also have a website for this show. Very technical. We have a website, WGN Radio Theater. And you go there, and there's all kinds of fun stuff. There's our entire schedule for generally many weeks in advance.
Yes.
So you'll know what we're playing. Because a lot of people ask us, what are you playing tonight? What are you playing tonight?
Right. Well, it gets posted on Facebook just maybe a day or two before. But we do have weeks ahead on our website.
Yeah, just go to WGNRadioTheater.com. And then we also post really cool pictures. So we play six shows every weekend, and we post six pictures of the stars. So right now, if you go to our Facebook page, you'll see the actors who played Lamont Cranston and Margot Lane, and you'll see John Daner as Paladin. And then in our first show, you saw a picture of Jim and Marion Jordan.
Right.
A really cool glamour shot of them.
Yes,
right?
Yeah, they look great.
Now, tonight when we come back here, we're going to play Our Miss Brooks. So tomorrow you'll see a picture of Eve Arden
right
in front of the CBS microphone. It's a great shot. And then you'll see Inner Sanctum Mysteries, a picture of Barry Kroger, who was the host on that show. And then The Whistler with Gerald Moore stars in The Whistler. So we'll post a picture of Gerald Moore. So we do that every week. What else is at our website? There's a lot of pictures of Lisa there, too.
Yeah, it's important.
So go to WGNRadioTheater.com. Okay, we're tuning in to Have Gun, Will Travel. This is called Maggie O'Banion. John Daner stars as Paladin. Let's return to April 5th, 1959. Here's the conclusion to Have Gun, Will Travel.
When a man is stripped of his horse, his saddle, and his guns, his problems become simple. He must have food and a place to rest. Once those things are attained, he can go about the job of retrieving his lost property, even if the job of washing dishes and serving meals comes first.
Here, you stay out of that stew.
Well, a man can get mighty hungry around this place working in the kitchen.
I've been watching you. You ain't no saddle bum. Just who are you, mister?
Would you believe me if I told you I was the oldest son of an English nobleman?
Well, not hardly. A little callus on your thumb there. Wouldn't be from a gun hammer, would it?
It might, Cookie.
You're here after someone or something?
Tell me about the foreman, Cyrus.
Hand me that other pot there. Cyrus runs the whole ranch for Miss Margaret. Has ever since her folks died.
Why doesn't she run it?
She's a lady, you can see that. Drinks tea and reads poultry books all day.
He's still an O'Banion.
Pouring them peeled potatoes.
You know, Cookie, puzzles me. This kind of range should support thousands of head of cattle. On my way here, I didn't see 20 steers.
Well, maybe you didn't look good. Cyrus does a good job for Miss Margaret. She don't have to turn a finger.
Pretty hard thing not to turn on a ranch this size, even if you are the owner and the lady.
Would you want somebody like her out there mixing with this ranching crowd? Like Jake and them others sitting outside now waiting to pay you back for dumping them in the trough? Or is somebody like her better off inside with her tea and poetry?
Nothing wrong with tea and poetry, Cookie, but it's not a substitute for living.
You carry your tray into her now.
All right.
You be polite, you hear?
All right. Tea?
Thank you. Will you pour, please?
One lump or two.
One, please. I probably should say I think that you've done very well so far.
Thank you.
Breakfast was served quite expertly. You show considerable household ability. Would you kindly stop staring at me like that?
Yes, ma'am.
A good servant tries to be as inconspicuous as possible.
Yes, ma'am.
The books on the mantel, please bring them.
Of course. Tennyson or Shelley, ma'am?
Oh, it doesn't matter.
But it does. I recommend this one. Shakespeare.
I think he's very common.
I mean, certain passages, maybe. He deals with common ideas, but in words of uncommon beauty.
Really? And are you a poet?
No, but I've read some.
I see. You may go.
As you say. Oh, I've drawn up a list of odd jobs for the men. Hard work always improves ranch discipline.
You've drawn up a list?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Well, I understand you're in some difficulty with the men.
Nothing that can't be straightened out.
Oh. Well, in that case, please feel free to oversee things.
Thank you.
Paladin.
Yes, ma'am?
I hope they thrash you within an inch of your life.
We'll be back to our show in just a minute, but first, this message. You know, our servicemen overseas have a wonderful opportunity to observe new customs and traditions. They find, too, that these ideas aren't so strange after all. For instance, take this business of tattooing. On some of the islands of the Pacific, the natives adorn themselves with tattoo marks indicating the group they belong to or the gods they worship. Among the Brahmins and Mohammedans, A tattoo is used as a mark of caste, although the caste system is rapidly disappearing. In Japan, skilled artists create truly beautiful designs using the human body instead of a canvas. Well, all this might sound strange, but tattooing is not unknown in our culture. However, as some of our servicemen have observed, it's a little embarrassing when a fellow with a tattoo that reads John Loves Mary takes as a wife a girl with the name of Josephine. Or the young man with a beautiful anchor on his chest finds himself in the Army or the Air Force. From another standpoint, the beauty marks worn by some women of Western civilization are nothing more than a form of tattoo. And the same thing is true about other customs and traditions of all countries. The way of doing things may be different, but the ideals are the same. These customs are important to the people who follow them. And our servicemen are helping to maintain goodwill by observing the customs of other people in other lands.
Enough.
Any of you others want to take it up?
Not me.
But all of you can get to work for a change. You. Cookie needs water. Hop to it.
Yes.
You. Firewood on the double. Half cord by sundown. You. In the barn. Curry those animals. Now, the rest of you, there's enough work for all hands around here. If you can't find any, let me know. I'll find it for you. Now hop.
What about me?
You and I are going to check the feed and water conditions, Jake. Any objections?
So long as I can't whop you, I'll ride with you. Well, that's about the size of it. What do you think?
Lots of grass. Plenty of water. Everything but cattle. Does Miss O'Banion know there's not even breeding stock left out here?
She knows what Cyrus tells her. No more.
Oh. Go on.
He even makes sure we don't get visitors through here poking around, asking the kind of questions you're asking.
I'm sure of that. Does he keep any sort of records?
Feed bills, ledger book in the barn. If you're going to buck Cyrus and his range crew, don't count on much help.
Well, I'm going to count on you for one thing, Jake. Those books, I want to look them over. Now, wait.
Miss Margaret, what's she doing out here? Ain't seen her on horseback since she went away to that fancy school.
Go on back, Jake. I'll be right along.
Yes, yeah, sure.
You go.
Oh, Mr. Paladin. Oh, I'm glad you happened along. My saddle seems
I didn't happen along.
What?
You knew I was riding out here. You circled ahead to this point, then you dismounted, loosened the cinch here.
How dare you speak to me that way?
Well, it's time somebody spoke to you some way.
What are you talking about?
You. Now, this is the first time you've ridden to your own ranch. I've never seen you look prettier. Even the britches are becoming.
A gentleman would never...
You know, you ride very well. I suspect when your parents' backs were turned, you used to slide out the window and pick out a horse and ride bareback.
Well, what if I did?
And between embroidery practice and elocution lessons, you even dreamed about running your own ranch. Out here, that'd be normal for a boy or a girl.
And I could run one, too.
Then why don't you?
I'm a lady. Anyway, I wouldn't know where to start now.
Then start by being honest. With yourself first. For example, why did you ride out here? What did you want?
Honest?
Yes.
I wanted to come right up to you and say... Stop calling me ma'am. I know you're not really hired help. You have a way of upsetting me every time that you walk into the room.
That might be dangerous for a lady.
You said to be honest. Well, I'm a woman, too.
In a week, I intend to be 1,000 miles from here.
Oh, Paladin.
I think we'd better ride back, Miss O'Banion. We wouldn't want to get caught out here after dark, would we?
On July 30th, 1619, the first representative assembly in America met in a log church in Jamestown, Virginia. The small group of men who comprised the House of Burgesses were America's first lawmakers. Initially, the assembly had only one chamber. Then, around 1680, an upper chamber was added, and Virginia's legislature had two houses. A century later, the concept of a two-chamber legislature was carried over to the United States Congress and resulted in the formation of the Senate and the House of Representatives. For almost 300 years, this type of legislation has been an important characteristic of American democracy. From the contributions of the past come the principles of the present.
Ranch is pretty quiet. I wonder where everyone is.
Isn't it supposed to be this way? Just you and I. We're the only ones left on earth.
Alan!
Jake?
Cyrus is back.
Where?
Inside. What can I do?
Well, that depends on Miss O'Banion. She's the boss here.
Oh, but...
Are those the ranch books?
Yeah.
Give them to me. Maggie, you're broke.
Broke?
Your range is stripped clean. Cyrus has the power to sign loans, and he's used it.
Oh, no. What'll I do?
You'll help yourself or you'll lose the place.
Well, well.
Cyrus.
Wondered where everybody was. I see you've been going to a lot of trouble. My books, huh?
That's right.
I wouldn't worry too much about them. See, what's to worry about are these notes I hold right here.
Notes?
That's what I was going to tell you. Cyrus obligated this ranch to several loans. Sold your cattle, pocketed the money, and used the money to buy the loan papers back.
All I have to do is demand payment. Oh, and speaking of debts, mister, don't you owe me something from our first meeting?
I was coming to that.
Now, wait a minute. I just collect guns. I don't use them. Now, it's your move. Fine. It's just what I wanted you to do.
Watch his knife, Mr. Paladin.
And now it ain't murder, is it? Just self-defense. I'm gonna cut you open like a pumpkin.
Hold it. The next bullet won't be wasted on the air. Put that knife down or I'll kill you, Cyrus, right where you stand.
I'd do it if I were you, Cyrus. Maggie O'Banion's taking over.
The knife, Cyrus. Drop it. Now, those notes, please.
You can't.
Yes, I can. Now, get off my property.
She means what she says.
How'd they do, Paladin?
Fine, Maggie. Fine.
What are you doing back in San Francisco?
Waiting to see you.
I think that's horrid. I just managed to get Roger straightened around to where he's decent to me again, and now you show up.
Would you rather I left again?
He's terribly difficult.
What did we do the last time he became difficult?
We went out to dinner and had a perfectly charming evening.
Then may I suggest that we do the same thing again tonight?
8 o'clock is always a good hour.
Until then, dear lady.
Until then.
Have Gun, Will Travel. Created by Herb Meadow and Sam Rolfe, is produced and directed by Norman McDonald, and stars John Daner as Paladin, with Ben Wright as Hayboy. Tonight's story was written by Gene Roddenberry and adapted for radio by John Dawson. Featured in the cast were Lynn Allen, Harry Bartell, Barney Phillips, and Virginia Gregg. Hugh Douglas speaking. Mm-hmm.
Have Gun, Will Travel is brought to you through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.
There you have it. Have Gun, Will Travel, April 5th, 1959, with Maggie O'Banion, written by Star Trek creator Gene Roddenberry and starring John Daner as the man called Paladin. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Okay, when we come back here in a few hours, 20-something hours,
we'll be back.
We're going to have more classic radio shows for you. Our Miss Brooks, starring Eve Arden. And then we'll tune into Inner Sanctum Mysteries, good scary episode. And then it's The Whistler. You won't want to miss that. So that's coming up at 11 p.m. tonight. Lisa and I will be right back here in the hot seat with Elif Garris, our producer. And coming up in just a few minutes, Dane Neal will be here. And, in fact, he's here early. What's up? What's up, Dane?
I came in just purposely to be able to say, I do declare. I heard at least
and it's not very early. I'm just saying it's pretty much close to 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it is pretty much close to 2. But I love what you guys are doing in phrases like I do declare.
And I love
the little, it's almost like a time machine. It's like your kids or your cat, right? You see them every day. You don't notice them grow. But when you heard the tattoo thing that you put in there, imagine the embarrassment when you have an anchor tattoo and you find yourself in the Army or the Air Force.
I wish I had a time machine so I can go back in time to when Lisa used to be nice to me.
Oh, come on.
That was when we first met.
I can't even remember those
days. Back in 2008 when she was nice to me. But since then, I'd say since 2009.
It's all behind the scenes because for the listeners, they see this amazing chemistry.
It's all Carl. Let's just be clear here. It's all Carl.
Lisa's real sweet on the air. But boy, you turn that microphone off.
Elif
knows. Elif knows. She sees it. Elif sees it. Right, Elif? Absolutely.
She's not answering. Good job.
Yes. Sorry.
Wait, what?
So, Dane, what's on the show this morning?
You're both driving the chemistry.
Chemistry drivers. That's
right. She wasn't listening.
I never was very good at chemistry. So,
well, a couple things we're going to be talking about that have been around probably since maybe some of the radio plays have been is that we'll talk some Olympics. We're going to talk some NFL Hall of Fame. We're going to talk some family vacations. Ah. You know, that whole kind of get in the car, do the Griswold family truckster thing.
Sure.
How rewarding that could be, how entirely miserable.
Right.
Maybe get some suggestions from any listeners that may be awake.
Little Miss Sunshine comes to brain.
Oh.
Did you see that movie?
I didn't. Tell me
about
it.
Oh, darn it.
Oh, that was a good movie.
Oh, wow. It just
Greg Kinnear is in
that,
right?
That just made me think of it when you said the family vacation.
Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Check it out.
When I think of vacation, I think of Christy Brinkley. That was the movie. That made that movie.
Or the car breaking down, or the truckster, or the optional.
They always break down.
Roll them up. You know, I mean, a lot of fun can be had.
She's in the pool, and he's like, this is crazy. And he jumps in the pool, and then the wife's watching him from up there. What are you doing, Griswold, what was his name?
Clark.
Yes.
Clark, what are you doing in that pool with that beautiful woman? Great movie, Vacation. And then they remade it with Ed, what's his name from Helms?
Ed Helms.
From The Office.
Yeah, the gun who lost the tooth.
Yes.
They remade the movie. I didn't see it, but they remade it.
He is very funny.
I think there's some lessons that can be taken from watching a movie like that, all the experience, hoping for some rewarding stuff. But, you know, get out there, see some parks, have kids not go to the bathroom or throw up in the car or stop at a Stuckey's or the world's largest ball of twine. You know, any of those things that are out there.
Can't miss the world's largest ball of twine.
Ball of twine.
Don't want to do that.